Do you want to build your brand by being a guest on industry-leading podcasts? If you're a business leader, an author, or a speaker, my guess is that you do. Picture this. You, a dynamic executive easily connecting with engaged audiences, turbocharging your top-of-funnel marketing, and creating a treasure trove of content with every episode. Podcasting is a game changer that you've been waiting for. And PodcastAlly.com is your VIP ticket to podcast PR success. Say goodbye to the ordinary and hello to the extraordinary exposure. Let the Podcast Ally team connect you with the best-in-class podcast for you to be a guest on. Head over to PodcastAlly.com and use the promo code DT for a 10% discount on Podcast Ally services. That's PodcastAlly.com, promo code DT. Welcome to High Octane Leadership with Donald Thompson. This season, we're diving deeper with more solo episodes, where I'll share the experiences that have led to recognition by EY, Forbes, Fast Company, and others. Not as a boast, but as milestones on my entrepreneurial path. From growing multi-million dollar firms to successful business exits and building high performance teams with a global perspective. I'll reveal the insights and strategies from my journey and share them with you so that we can win together. Alongside these solo episodes, we'll have industry visionaries and thought leaders, and we'll explore effective leadership. Ready to empower your leadership journey with real success stories? Let's embark on this transformational journey together. Today, I'm joined by Bob Batchelor, an award-winning communications strategist at the Diversity Movement. With a rich background in executive communications and content creation, Bob's mission is to spark lasting cultural change, fostering a more inclusive society, and helping businesses thrive. Beyond his impactful role, Bob is a critically acclaimed cultural historian and biographer, known for works on Stan Lee, Bob Dylan, The Great Gatsby, Mad Men, and John Updike. Thanks for coming on the show, Bob. I really appreciate it.
I'm so excited here today, Don, to be with you to talk about a couple topics that I know you've spent time thinking about, that the world is thinking about right now. I want to kind of preface our discussion of feedback today with a statistic that I saw just recently. It said 69% of managers are, quote, uncomfortable communicating with employees. I think that really speaks to, from multiple levels, why feedback is such an important topic. Maybe you could just tee some ideas about feedback up, and then I'll follow up with some more pointed questions.
Yeah, I think that statistic says a lot, and I'll unpack a couple of thoughts from my perspective, right? In this new world of work, managers and people leaders are on eggshells because we're more focused about not saying the wrong thing versus giving people the information they need to grow in their careers, to meet their objectives. Because the backlash of making a wrong comment, saying something a little bit too harsh, right? Saying something that somebody doesn't receive well is so significant that I think, and quite frankly, I have personally pulled back in the amount of feedback that I give, not just the style. And it's not necessarily a good thing, but it's a real thing. And so that's one of the reasons I'm looking forward to this conversation, not only to share some nuggets that I've learned over the years, but also to be very transparent with leaders that over the executives that I talk to, the things that I read, this is a very common issue because it's like you should be more thoughtful in how you describe things to people. You should be more empathetic. But how do you do these things while still adding the business level directness that's required so people understand when they're not meeting a standard or need to get to the next level or encouragement? So it is an interesting, I guess the word would be dichotomy, the way to think about it.
Yeah, definitely. Let's break down the different types of feedback. So I'd like you to talk about feedback to a manager. And that has two parts, because I think for younger professionals who are listening to High Octane Leadership, that would be a valuable point, something they're probably not super comfortable with. also to a manager if you're an older professional or more seasoned, experienced, and then feedback to peers and then to teams, which would be your direct reports or reports. So I think those three categories will really provide some insight into this overall.
Let me start at a very high level, and then I'll drill down into the specific elements of feedback that you talked about, which are very powerful. So at a high level, one of the things I've learned about giving feedback is you don't want to just get something off your chest as a manager. Your goal is to be helpful. Your goal is that the feedback moves a conversation forward, moves an action forward, creates positive change, or here's the thing, recognizes outstanding performance, right? Sometimes when we talk about feedback, and I do this also, we automatically drift to how to give people constructive feedback, negative feedback, coaching feedback, all those things. A lot of being excellent as a business leader is finding those moments where people are doing something right, doing something well, doing something that exceeds standard, and being able to slow down as a leader and showing that appreciation. So at a high level, I want folks to think about or encourage folks. It's not about what I want. I would encourage folks to think about feedback in three pillars, right? Number one, appreciation, right? This is where you're acknowledging, right, where people are doing something that is phenomenal, right? Doing something that's helping move the business forward. I'll use an example in our business, right? Like in working with Gen Z and millennials and baby boomers, right? It's a lot of different perspectives. A lot of times baby boomers, they only want the critique. They don't believe the positive feedback, right? Because they're not used to it in the workplace. Whereas the Gen Zers, if you don't give enough positive feedback, they don't trust you because you're not valuing them appropriately. So as I work with teams, I've had to learn how to show more appreciation than coaching or constructive feedback. So the first thing is appreciation should be the dominant way that you reinforce what the standards are. You don't do it through negative coaching, what's lacking. You do it through appreciation of what you'd like to see more of, right? And so appreciation is one perspective. The second component is coaching, and that's where you're helping people at a more tactical, technical level perform their work better. And then evaluation is where you are looking at a 30-day period of time, 60-day period of time, you're looking at a project, and you are giving feedback on whether or not a finite task, a finite project met its objectives or not. Where did it succeed? Where did it have gaps? Where could we do better? And so when I think about those three buckets of feedback, we want to make sure that we use those across the spectrum. And here's another important point. We don't need to try to use them all in the same conversation. That, I think, is a misnomer, a fallacy, a wrong way to do it. A lot of people talk about the sandwich method, right? Say something good, say something constructive, then say something good. Well, we know, based on the way the human psyche is, we remember the negative at its highest level. So it's better, if you're coaching, to spend the time on the constructive feedback and extend the conversation with how you can be supportive as a leader in helping that person get there. In hearing their and digging into their understanding of why they didn't meet the mark. Maybe it's something unknown that you're not aware of, right? Maybe they needed legitimately more resources than were made available. Maybe they hit some roadblocks that if you had been made aware of, you could have helped them with. So the coaching doesn't always mean who's at fault. It also assesses a situation to say, this is what happened. How do we get to the other side together? So anyway, appreciation, super important. And I had to learn how to do that more, right? More than I was comfortable. I'm a son of a football coach. A lot of the managers I had growing up were very direct, military style. I thrived in that. Most people don't, right? So appreciation matters to show care and value for what people are doing. Coaching is the more tactical. And then that evaluation is where you do get granular and you say, look, we either met the mark or we didn't, and breaking up into those. As we delve into the types of feedback based on role, which was another comment that you made that I appreciate. Most people aren't going to give direct negative feedback to their peers. And I'm not necessarily saying that you have to or you ought to. Like, let's just be for real, right? But here's how you want to think about it. If you knew that one of your teammates was going to go into a meeting with their manager and it wasn't going to go well because you reviewed some of their work and you didn't tell them. Are you a good teammate? Now, we're not even to how you tell them or the best way or the best time. What do you owe to your team members to share with them things that you see that they might miss? And so the way to approach a teammate is, number one, ask permission to help, right? When I was working in larger corporations and different peers and new kid on the block, I sold one of my companies to KPIT, which is a large technology company based out of Pune, India, phenomenal experience. But I went from being the CEO of a company of about 150 people to an executive in a company of 10,000 people, right? So I had a lot of folks that were on my level, right? You know, I was a part of the top 50 leadership team, and then there was another 100 executives that I interacted with a lot. And so now I had to think about, how do I manage with peers and egos and stature and all this stuff? And so what I learned to do, and this works at any level, hey, if I could give a few comments, would you be open to hearing it? I ask permission to dig in with that person. Right. And then I tell that person, say, listen, this is not about one-upmanship. I was meeting with XYZ, and I think there's a couple things that I could add value to your project. Do you want to walk through a couple things? By asking permission to engage, it creates a humbleness versus a holier-than-thou perspective. And I do that with people that I'm on a peer level, right? Because it's sometimes optional whether you have to give that feedback or not, quite frankly. Right? So if you don't want to hear it, I don't want to hurt our relationship by jamming it down your throat. I got other stuff to do. The other thing with a peer is you always want to learn new things. And so I would do and have done in many roles is I would say, listen, here are a couple things that I'm really good at, right? I'm strong in business development. I'm strong in this. If I can ever be helpful, please let me know. Right? Because we're in this together. And I'm hoping that if you need me, I'll be there for you. And if you need me, it'll be reciprocal. Right. And by starting out giving and asking for support and feedback gave me the platform to give feedback back to that individual. Right. So I created feedback opportunities by asking for it first, by being a good recipient of feedback. And then more of my peers would then reciprocate and ask what I thought. And then we did that in a good nature and a good term. The biggest thing that people are afraid of is how to interpret feedback from their leader and their manager when it may or may not be constructive. And, you know, there's still a lot of fear in businesses today, especially with layoffs and different things that are going on. Negative feedback doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get fired. It doesn't mean that your boss is mad at you. It doesn't mean you're terrible at your complete job. What it means is that you're getting feedback at a particular moment in time on a specific topic, and what can you learn from it? And so a lot of times when I'm working with young emerging leaders and professionals, they're very focused on how the feedback is delivered, to the point that they miss a lot of the meaning in what the feedback is trying to teach them. And so one of the points of guidance that I would say, and this might ruffle a few feathers, it's okay. I think a lot of times people are a little bit too soft, like tissue paper, and miss knowledge from someone that's their senior in experience or in role because they didn't like how the feedback was delivered. What I've always tried to do in my career, and it served me well, the higher the number of personalities I can work with successfully, the better chances I have of moving up and winning in that organization. And so I made a deliberate focus to make sure I learned from what someone was trying to tell me. And if the feedback was delivered, let's say a little bit assertively, right? Bob, you've met my mentor, Grant, and he's a super nice guy. And you're meeting, it's like you're meeting Grandpa today. But growing up with him as my business dad, he's pretty direct. Right? Like he says what he means and he's pretty direct. And so I remember listening to him one time and he was giving me some feedback. And the feedback was on target, but it was a little more assertive than it needed to be. Right? And so I said, Grant, I'm going to take these 3 points of feedback and I'm going to go crush it. I appreciate it. I got it. Can I give feedback in a two-way street, or is this kind of a dictatorial relationship? Like, do you just want me to do what I'm told, or would you like a perspective also, right? And he paused for a minute. I asked him, and he paused for a minute. He said, no. He said, what you got? I said, Grant, it took about 30 minutes for you to tell me something that could have taken five and give me a chance to go fix it. The first 5 to 7 minutes were very valuable, instructive, and I get where you're coming from. The last 15 were because you were frustrated with me. But that took away, which I may or may not have deserved. Like, I'm not pushing back on this. I promise I told him just like this. But I'd rather take the 10 minutes and then go fix it so that we can get on with what we need to get done. And he said, you know what? He said, here's what you need to do. When I'm talking to you about something and you got it, then you tell me you got it and you understand. And then I'll wind it down and give you a chance to go address it. And then if we come back to it again, then you'll just have to understand where that frustration lives. But we created a communication protocol. Basically, I didn't have to sit there for an extra 30 minutes, right? I got a chance to go fix it. And then if I fixed it, we were done, we move on. If I didn't fix it, then maybe I needed to hear a little bit more, right? Now, I'm not saying that Grant or I are the, in, you know, the model, right, for everything that is feedback. But what we did do is we shared openly with one another. And so the final thing I'll say, Bob, and then I'll get to the next question, but it's such a good question. I just got going. The quality of feedback is also aligned with the quality of the relationship you have with that person. You and I have worked together for a couple of years now. The first 6 months, it's not that the relationship was rocky, but we were still trying to find our footing as human beings. And it's hard to deliver quality feedback, positive or constructive, with somebody that doesn't fully trust you yet. And so as a manager and a leader, you have to think about the trust barometer that you're building with people, not just the way you want to give feedback. Because the way that person's going to internalize it is if they know that you care about them, their career, their family, if they believe you have what's in their best interest, then whatever that feedback is, even if it's tough for a moment, they're going to understand and believe your intentions. If they don't trust your intentions, they think you're just out for self, if they think they're just a cog in the wheel at the corporation, then it's going to be tough to give and have that feedback received because the trust platform is not there. And I think the big mistake managers make is not focusing on the trust platform with their people before they're focused on what they're trying to get them to do and grow into.
Yeah, the surprising thing, and I appreciate that answer, Don. I knew that that multi-part question would have a lot of tentacles, so I appreciate you sticking with me on that one. 69% of managers uncomfortable communicating. I mean, it speaks to something societal, which is so, as you said earlier, dichotomous. We speak all day long, but people don't listen, or they don't know how to listen, and probably a lot of the things being spoken aren't directed the right way. So I think you probably have stories about this or personal transitions that you made. I think it's how a leader goes from some imaginary vision of what they think leadership is to actually, how do you enact emotional IQ? How do you become tactful? How do you become diplomatic?
Yeah. So one of the things, and I can use myself as a really powerful example, because when I first became a CEO, I was afraid of failing. It was more pressure than I'd ever had in a corporate setting. And I was overwhelmed. And when you're overwhelmed, when you're afraid, when you got big goals, your natural instinct is to press. Your natural instinct is to be bolder, more assertive. And it's a covering of that lack of confidence, that lack of experience. And so I found myself being under the covers of being direct and being clear, a little bit too harsh. And I had to grow out of that. And the way that you grow out of that is not the tactics, it's the mindset. The more you care about your people in line with the goals of the corporation, the more thoughtful you'll be in how you talk to people. When you only think in terms of the monetary outcome output, then you'll say all kinds of stuff. Guilty. It's happened to me, and I have contributed to this negativity. But I've learned from it, right? I didn't stay there, right? And the reason I didn't stay there is because I have and have always had true care for the people that decided to partner with me and be on the teams that I was leading. And I wanted their experience to be amazing. I wanted them to be on a winning team. I wanted them to get better career progress because of having worked together. I wanted them to be in an environment where their voice was heard. And so I wanted to help them strengthen that voice. But in order to be more thoughtful, to have more empathy, you have to care more about than just that bottom line. And so what that allowed me to do is learn how to communicate for the audience, not based on my natural instinct of how to communicate. And I'll give a couple of examples. And the gentleman's name is Jason Harrell, talented technologist that worked with me in a company called iCubed. And he pulled me aside, and I was so thoughtful and grateful, so grateful that I created an environment where I wanted everyone to speak up. If you've got a problem, say about it, right? If you've got an issue, need something to come up and you keep it to yourself, then handle it. But if you bring it up, then we're going to handle it together, right? So I didn't do everything wrong. I created an environment where people could speak up and there wasn't retribution for speaking up. So Jason spoke up. So after one of our company meetings, Jason said, hey, Don, can I talk to you? And I was like, sure. What you got? You know, what's up? And I thought I was going to get praise for my latest speech, man, and rallying the troops. And we made our quarterly numbers. And Jason goes, hey, if you use one more football analogy, about 10 of us are going to quit. He said, we haven't played football. We don't know anything about football. It doesn't make us want to work harder, right? We don't understand. It was like Jason got the votes to speak on behalf of a group of developers. And I sat back and thought about it, and I was like, huh. If you're a sales professional, you tailor your message to the audience. If you're a marketer, you tailor your message to the audience. If you're a CEO and a leader, you tailor your message to the audience. So I needed to use different metaphors, different examples that my team would understand, versus what was natural for me to communicate based on what I understood. But Jason's courage and confidence to give me that feedback allowed me to learn. And so back to that point of feedback is, I think that we believe in today's environment that feedback is the boss's responsibility to get it right. I believe any kind of relationship is a two-way street. Now, I think it's more heavily weighted to the leader. I do believe that. But I do think that teams and team members, whether you communicate it to HR, whether you communicate it to your manager, whether you write a note and slide it under your boss's door, you've got to communicate to people that have authority and influence when there's things that you see that they may not understand, because all of us have blind spots. But that's an example, Bob, of what you're describing.
I want to touch on a point that is going to speak more to your executive coaching and global experience.
Okay.
So one of the things that I know about you that isn't universally known, people know you coach, and you coach people from across spectrums. You coach younger professionals, students through multi-billion dollar C-suite leaders. And so one of the things that I know that you do as a coach is you have to listen well, and you do need to provide feedback. So particularly, I know, with global audiences, has there anything that you've been doing in your global coaching that has changed the way you look at feedback? Because I know you're working with different leaders in Europe, in Asia, in India.
Yep.
How has that global perspective changed?
Oh my gosh. Bob, thanks for asking the question, because that's a really big topic and something that I've learned quite a bit over my career. Your advice as a leader, your communication as a leader, has to take in consideration the cultural differences of the audience that you're working with, right? Like, if you think about folks that are doing business in Germany, for example, right? And you think about engineering and exactness and push through, and that's right. You think about doing work in India, which is still very hierarchical. And so if you're giving somebody advice of Asian Indian descent and telling them to go talk to their manager and give their manager feedback, they're gonna be like, yeah, probably not gonna do that. Yeah, thanks, Dom, but I'm probably not gonna do that, right? And so you have to take into consideration the way that culture impacts our business environment, and then give people advice that can work in the context that they're living in. And that's a very, very important distinction. And so I'll give an example of a piece of feedback I gave to someone that their boss was European. They are a US employee of a global business and very strong command and control leader. And how do you approach that when you have some good ideas and different perspective? I said a couple things. So when you're talking to somebody that's a high octane leader, if you're talking to me, for example, instead of just sharing your idea, just say to that leader, John, are you open to alternative points of view? Or is what you're telling me the dictate that you want me to work against? And now that leader has to sit back, and most leaders are not going to sit there and go, no, do it like I said. Do you know how, like, that's so, right? So you've kind of put them in a box, but you've been respectful and you've created space for you to be heard, right? Number two, that's one example of phrasing that I use. Number two, when I'm working with leaders, I'll say, you gave me a way to do something. You gave me feedback. I have a couple of new ideas. Can we test both of these in the marketing content that we write and give you options for you to then select? Again, you've not said you don't agree with their idea, which you shouldn't do to a strong, authoritative command and control leader. But what you did is ask permission to add other alternatives to their thought process, bring back to them, for them to be able to choose the solution that works best in the context. So for me, when we're working from cultural differences, but also what I weaved in, Bob, is personality differences, right? We have to learn how to phrase our communication in a way that is purposeful, powerful, but also incredibly polite. And it's really tough for me as a leader when somebody is purposeful, right? Professional. Polite for me not to hear them. No matter what my mood is, no matter what my personality is, that goodness really, really shines through and is a very, very powerful thing that I learned as a sales professional to apply it to a lot of different types of communication. But to your overall question, Bob, I think the cultural differences is super important. And even when we're working within a US company, think about people from all different parts of the U.S.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Let alone the global prospects, right? And it's really, really important to take into consideration those backgrounds, those understandings, so you can be more effective, right, as you talk with folks.
Yeah, that's a great point, Don. The personality piece and what you explained there is laying the context, which is essential if you're really going to understand somebody. The problem people get into is they want to get their points out so fast that they don't hear the other person, and then the context is destroyed. And so what you're saying is slow down enough. It's also interesting that some of the things that make us good as business leaders, we don't then use when we're talking to other people. Like, you're a salesperson background-wise and a leader. And I know from watching you now for several years, you use that training to apply to the way that you lead. I look at things usually from a communications. So when I'm trying to lead, I tell stories because that's what I know people understand. So it's interesting, the context. And I think that's a great point, regardless of where you're dealing with people around the world. So one last question, because I know we're running out of time today, and this has been chock full of information. I can't wait to watch it back and read the transcript. One of the things I'm really interested in is the word feedback itself, because feedback, I mean, it really is, you're looking backward. But I know that people, when they get feedback, really the hope I would think is, how do we play this into the future? How did what I did before? So maybe you could talk a little bit about that from a leader's perspective, somebody who's giving feedback, but is trying to address that change, that transition that you want from people that you're working with.
Oh my gosh. Let's use one that is pretty common, right? You're working in a business, you're leading a business, and all of your employees, not some of them, not a high percentage of them, all of them think that they should make more money than they're making. All of them. So at some point, you're going to have a financial conversation where you may have a disconnect between what that team member thinks, what you think, and what the organization can do. And these are very difficult conversations because in no way do you want to insult that individual, right? That is working hard, that is generating value in different things. But a lot of times before you talk about them, you need to talk about the context of the situation in which they're working. And so what I try to do, and since money is a sensitive topic, right? And when it comes up, and there's a lot of emotion to it and different things. So a couple of things that are really, really important. Number one, as a business leader in this example, is I want to know what the individual wants. Ultimately, what do they want to achieve that would make them happy in this situation? Whether I can do it or not right now, I will figure that out. But I want to know what you want. Right? I want to make more money. That doesn't help me. And I'll tell people that just like that. Like, and whether that's good or bad feedback, but if it says, I need to make an extra $20,000, I want to be here, I want to do X, Y, Z, fantastic. Let's now talk about a couple of facets. Here's what the organization values that you're doing, that if you do more of this, we can get there together. If we're having a conversation business-wise where if you don't get here now, you need to leave the organization, let's discuss how to do that in a professional way, right? I get it. There's sometimes that's a reality, right? The person has another job offer or they want to buy a bigger house, and right now is when that has to happen. I totally understand it. I can either do it or I can't do it. But if what we're talking about is how to foster a relationship that feels comfortable and competent and equitable over time, which is usually most of the situations, right? Usually it's most of the situations. Then I want to talk about what's working, also what's not working. Because a lot of times that team member thinks everything they're doing is amazing, and then I need a little bit more. And it's usually not exactly like that. But here's the thing. If you do these two things more, if we structure it this way, why don't we have a conversation about doing this together as a team to get you where you want to go? And now all of a sudden, when I have that unity of partnership with that team member to get them where they want for their family, they're much more open to any kind of feedback I need to give them because now we're doing it together. I'm not against them. I've already communicated. I want them to have that. But here are the constraints. Here's the opportunities. Let's do it together. And so in terms of feedback and that example and communication, I still have to communicate what's working, what's not, what the market bears, what the company can do. But we end up with a point of we're going to figure out how to win together. So our conversations about this very sensitive topic of money is not adversarial, because I'm trying to help you get what you want. And these are the parameters to do it. And so feedback is really about how to have meaningful conversations with people and finding that common ground where you can be on the same side, where it's not adversarial in any way. It still is going to be open and honest. I'll give an example of feedback with my wife and I, right? And I'm learning a bunch.
Be careful.
Like the last
few years. Be careful.
Yeah, I know. I'm learning a bunch, right? Because I used to be a little bit too direct, right, in my professional and personal life. And shit didn't work out all the time, right? So it's not like it didn't always work out. What I do now is I ask questions. Is I'll ask my wife, I'll just say, Jackie, help me understand what you want me to learn from this. And she'll give me one, two, or three things. Now, Jackie, if you want to go 3 for 3, this might take a minute. But there's two of the things you said that I agree with 100%. Would it be cool if we started talking about those two things? And let's lead with those two things. And then I'm going to go and reflect on that one thing that I'm a little unsure about. And she'll be like, okay, right? Like she'll take, take the two wins and work on the others. It's the same thing in the professional life. It's how do we frame and craft conversations to where we can move forward together? And then feedback and communication doesn't have to be this negative thing. Now, I know many of you are asking, well, you sound like an amazing boss. You sound like somebody that would do that. And this works with bad bosses too, because you know what bad bosses want? They want to get raises. They want their review from their employees to be good. They want to go to their president's club or whatever thing they get in their company, right? So you just have to, as a team member, be able to approach feedback and say, Joanne, I really want to be more productive for you. I want to be more involved with helping our team meet its goals. Is it okay if I share with you a couple things that maybe I just don't understand that I'd love your feedback on? But in order for you to do that, you have to get out of your feelings about the way Joanne leads and make sure that you are handling the conversation with purpose, with professionalism, and a little bit of politeness. Most people these days, it's all about them, how they feel, how something was landed with them. And they don't slow down to think about the fact that they can own the room if they take the higher ground and learn how to use effective feedback and language so that they can be the superstar in any conversation. That's what we're talking about on this podcast. And that's the one thing that I've learned that has helped me. I can go into any room, anytime, anywhere in the world, as long as if I don't speak the language, I have a translator or something like that, right? Like, right? And work and deal with people. Because number one, I want to be helpful. Number two, I want to be truthful. Number three, I want to make sure we all win together. And because that's where I'm coming from, that is global. People receive that tone and temperament globally, right? And I think we all could use a little bit more humility. It doesn't reduce our directness, but just a little more humility, and we can drive feedback and conversations forward in a much better way.
Well, that was great, Don. I appreciate that. And I think what you laid out there and what I appreciate about this conversation today, you've laid out under the rubric of feedback, you've laid out a blueprint for becoming an inclusive leader. And that's where people should be moving toward at any level, so that companies are filled up and down the hierarchy as it is with inclusive leaders. So thanks, Don. I appreciate you letting me jump on to the High Octane Leadership podcast today. It's been a blast, and I think people are really going to enjoy this episode.
Bob, as always, I enjoy chatting with you. You ask thought-provoking questions and get me rolling, and it's always a good time. Thank you for joining us on High Octane Leadership with Donald Thompson. Today's episode is a step in our collective journey towards leadership excellence. Remember, every story we share and every insight we gain is a piece in the puzzle of our leadership journey. For more insight and detail, hit the subscribe button so that we can stay connected.
For deeper information and more episodes, go to donaldthompson.com. Continue to lead with vision and purpose, and until we meet again, embrace your role as a high-octane leader in the ever-evolving world of business.